Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
Orla, thank you very much for that. Now, as we heard on this show last week, the family of the late Aoife Johnston are profoundly disappointed in the report into her death at University Hospital Limerick. Aoife, who was 16, died after a 12-hour wait in UHL emergency department in December 2022. She was diagnosed with bacterial meningitis and developed sepsis. The family have now called on the HSE to publish the report carried out by former Supreme Court Justice Frank Clark into her death immediately and in full. Today and tomorrow, Fianna Fáil are holding their annual think-in, and before coming on air, I spoke to Fianna Fáil Health Minister Stephen Donnelly, and I began by asking him for his response to that request from the Johnston family.
I think we need to listen very carefully to Aoife's mum and dad, to Carol and James. I met them. I apologise to them on behalf of the state, because the reality is their beautiful daughter Aoife was failed, and what happened shouldn't have happened. And we have to put Carol and James and Aoife's family right at the heart of anything we do. So if they're saying that not enough has been done, then in my view, we must do more. The first thing we have to do is we have to publish the report. Bernard Gloucester, the chief exec, has said that it's always been his intention to publish this month. So we'll have the report published in the next 2 weeks. So that'll give people a chance to look at it. And I'm certainly very happy, of course, to meet Carol and James again. I know Bernard is as well, and to hear directly from them as to what more they want.
In terms of the timing of the publication of the report, the family told us last Thursday they wanted it published immediately. That obviously still hasn't happened. You're talking about in 2 weeks' time. What's the delay? Why can it not be published immediately?
Well, it can, and as the chief exec has said, it's always been his intention to publish this month. They're just going through the report to see wherever there are, say, personal details of people who are named in them. There might have to be some redactions around that, but to be clear, not in terms of any of the findings or the conclusions, just where there might be personal details on individuals, and then the report is going to be published.
So the family called last week for the immediate publication of the report in its entirety, unredacted. And what you're telling me today is that it'll be published in 2 weeks, not in its entirety, that it will be redacted.
It will be in its entirety, and critically, any of the findings that the retired Chief Justice has made, any of the conclusions, any of the recommendations, that will all be there. It's simply a case where you might have named individuals and there might be personal information about them, nothing to do with what happened, but just personal information that might have been in the transcripts. Those things, just as a matter of course, would normally be redacted. But the report in full, including the testimony, the conclusions from the retired Chief Justice, his recommendations, all of that will be published.
Will the redactions mean that it will be harder for the family or others to understand who is accountable for what happened?
No, I don't believe so. It is a thorough report. I've seen the report. The family are correct in that it doesn't make findings. As your listeners will be aware, to set up the kind of process that can make findings, it's a process that can take an awful lot of time. And certainly I was very keen, and the chief executive were very keen, that Carol and James and Aoife's family would get answers much more quickly than those processes take. And if this is to be the first step in that journey, then so be it. But I want to see, and I know the chief executive wants to see this report published imminently, and it will be.
Because when you met the family, the Johnston family, on January 19th last, they said that they had been assured at that stage by the HSE the investigation would be unfettered, evidence-driven, and that Mr. Clark could go wherever the evidence took him, and that there would be accountability. It's not those things, is it? It's not unfettered, and it hasn't been able to make findings of fact. It hasn't been able to make any adverse findings.
It is pretty stark. He doesn't hold back. There's a
the
lot of testimony.
Family says it's superficial, Minister.
Well, look, all I can say is that it's a retired Chief Justice, Chief Justice Clark, who's done the report. He has done the report, I think, to the fullest extent one can do without setting up the kind of statutory inquiry that allows people to make findings. And then you'll be aware, and your listeners will be aware, that on the back of the report, There have been processes initiated against named individuals in the hospital, obviously, because that's a legal process. I can't say any more on it, but in terms of accountability, The chief executive has taken action, as people in the Midwest will be aware.
In terms of those disciplinary proceedings that are taking place, has her family been kept up to date on those?
I'm not sure what level of interaction they've had on that, but certainly it would always be the intent of those leading this in the HSE to have the fullest possible engagement with Aoife's mum and dad.
At what point were they told there would be no adverse findings, as they had been promised?
I'm not sure, because there would have been a lot of interactions between the HSE and Carol and James, and of course with their solicitor as well. Certainly, in order to make adverse findings, you need a much bigger, a much slower process. You need a statutory process. But
and when did you know that? Sorry, can I just ask you, when did you know that? Because you were talking in January. You said if there's adverse findings, there might be accountability or process put in place. You were talking about the possibility of adverse findings when you were talking about this report in January. So when were you made aware there'd be no adverse findings?
Well, first of all, can I say, in terms of accountability, there is a process in place, and there are disciplinary proceedings in train against several individuals, and so there is accountability linked to this report and linked to another report which we'll be publishing as well in the next 2 weeks, which is a report that Grace Rothwell and others did into the hospital.
You said this might be the first step. What will be the second step? Because the family clearly are not happy, and you started this conversation by saying that this all has to be about the family.
Yeah, I don't want to preempt that. What I want to do is listen very carefully to the family. I'd be very happy to meet Carol and James again. I know Bernard Gloucester would be very happy to meet them again, and listen directly to what they want rather than me making suggestions. I think we need to listen to the family.
Well, I think it's quite clear what they want. They wanted adverse findings, they wanted findings of fact, and they wanted evidence where there was conflicting evidence on both sides. They wanted a decision made on which evidence is right.
Yeah, and so we can sit down with them and we can talk through potential options.
And what are those options? That's what I'm asking you. What can you say to the family? Because they're not happy with what they've been given.
Well, the process that gets you adverse findings is generally a statutory investigation of some description. So we can talk through those options. I would just urge one note of caution, which is we've seen many of these statutory investigations, and lawyers love them because lawyers end up getting paid vast amounts of money from the state. In fact, lawyers tend to be the ones who win out of these things. What I have seen is people who are looking for answers not get them for many, many years, because they're very slow processes. People lawyer up and they go to the High Court for injunctions and they do all sorts of things to frustrate these processes. So what I want to do is I'd like to have these options discussed in detail with Aoife's family, and then let's see where we go from there.
I want to ask you about general health provision and services, and I might start with the GPs, because your General Secretary in the Department of Health, Robert Watt, he's rejected the claim that we're facing a national shortage of GPs, even though there's very large numbers. I think 25% over 60 expected to retire very shortly. So he says Robert Watt says this is a localised issue confined to certain counties. Do you agree with him that there's no national shortage of GPs in this country?
Yeah, the evidence is very clear that there are areas where there is a shortage of GPs. Take Gorey in Wexford. I met a lot of people in Gorey on the streets. I was there not long ago discussing healthcare with the public there, and they were very clear that the single biggest healthcare issue they have in Gorey is a shortage of GPs. Yeah. I met the GPs, and the solution there is a new primary care centre, which we're now putting in place.
There's very many places other than Gorey, though, isn't there? I mean, the recommendation from the ICGP is that we should have 12 GPs per 10,000 people in this country. And at the moment, we've 7, almost half of what the recommendation is.
Yeah, we've 7.4 now. And what we've done is we've tripled the number of GP training places. So what the ICGP have said is we're on our way now because we have a record number of, well, first of all, we have a record number of GPs, but of course it's a growing and aging population. So the need for GPs obviously is going up and up. Right now we've got about 7.4 GPs per 10,000 people. The ICGP have said that we're now on our way to the Scottish and Danish level, which is between 9 and 10. And they think we're growing year on year now.
So you're still saying we don't have a shortage. Years. We don't have the Scottish level. We don't have the Danish level. We don't have the ICGP recommendation of 12. But you say, and the Department General Secretary says, there's no shortage.
No, what I'm saying is, in certain areas like Gorey, and as you say, in many other areas, people are waiting too long to see the
GP. Yeah, that sounds like a national shortage if it's in Gorey and many other areas.
Well, in contrast to that, we have a record number of GPs. We've never had as many, and we've tripled the number of training places. Mm. And so essentially, we've worked very closely with the ICGP. Right. What we have now, Sarah, is for every one GP who's retiring, we have more than two GPs entering practice. We've invested a lot, not just in the number of GPs, but in the scope of their practice. All so right. GPs today now
I'll
have
move
access
on,
to diagnostics. They're treating patients with chronic diseases. They're doing a lot more than they were doing even 4 years ago. But can I fully acknowledge we a lot of progress has been made, but we of course have a ways to go.
I want to ask you about a report today that a boy suffering from life-threatening scoliosis was removed from the Children's Health Ireland urgent scoliosis surgery waiting list. And as well as that, we've got these recent figures that put the total spinal surgery waiting list at Children's Health Ireland at 281 patients. That includes those with spina bifida. Now, 2 years ago, you said you were told by CHI it would ensure no child would have to wait more than 4 months for spinal surgeries. And yet here we are.
There's a few things there. On the boy we're talking about, there's very little I can say in terms of anybody's individual case. But in this particular case, he was taken off the spinal list. It's a clinical decision. It was a clinical decision by the team in Children's Health Ireland. I can't give any more detail than that for obvious reasons, but...
But apparently he's also not the only one who's been taken off the list. Scoliosis Ireland are saying today that many other parents have been taken off the list and only found out in August when letters went out to other parents and they didn't get a letter.
What the team in Children's Health Ireland have been doing, your listeners will be aware that this has been a top priority for me personally and this government. I funded a plan in 2022, and you're quite right, CHI gave me and the government a commitment that by the end of that year, no child would be waiting more than 4 months. We funded it in good faith. Through 2023, it was very clear that not only had the 2022 target not been reached, but that the plan was not going to work. I was not satisfied that the resources that we had funded, I'm satisfied that they were put in place and that they are being used to treat children, but that the spinal children were not being prioritised. So I met privately with some of the surgeons. And between us, we came up with a different plan, which is to create a dedicated spinal service. This is what they have in Stockholm and they have in some other places. And so we have further resourced the spinal service. They've hired more people in. I travelled to New York and to Pittsburgh recently as well. There's a fantastic centre in New York.
Sorry, I'm just going to stop you for a second. When will you be able to stand over the commitment that no child will have to wait more than 4 months for spinal surgeries in this country?
That's been worked through by the CHI team at the moment. So what I am waiting for from CHI is a date for when they believe they can stand over that.
Well, that's what I'm asking you, though. When is that date? Because there's no point making a commitment when it's not in place at the moment. So when will you be able to say to parents, from this date, for real this time, no child will have to wait more than 4 months for spinal surgery?
When I get one from CHI that they can stand over. And can I say...
And Minister, is this acceptable? Do you think this is acceptable?
Well, Sarah,
in a country where we've got apparently 14 billion coming to us, where we're overrun with cash, is what we're hearing, surpluses all over the place, and you can't give a commitment today that no child will have to wait more than 4 months for spine. Do you think that's acceptable?
I don't think anything to do with this service over the last 10 years is acceptable. I think these children have been failed. Do I think it is acceptable? No, I don't. I don't. The parents are furious. I think they are right to be furious. I'm furious. I'm deeply frustrated, and I'm not one of the parents. I'm not having to watch my child in this position.
I want to ask you finally. You said recently you want children under 16 to be banned from accessing social media, and now you've set up this online task force to examine harms to children and any gaps in existing law. I know Gillian Van Turnhout is a really excellent person and very well able to head up this online task force. But do we really need it? Don't we know what those gaps are?
We do need it. There's a lot of action that's already been taken. We have the European Act, the Digital Service Act, and we have the Irish Act. Now, the binding code is what we've all been waiting for this to go live in the Irish law. We believe that's going to be in October. Certainly, that's what the Online Safety Commission team are saying. But our view, my view, is children are not safe online.
Yeah.
Social media companies know that. So they have a choice. They can take corrective action now to make their product safe, something that some of them have made some efforts to, but quite frankly, others really haven't. They can do that, or we will need to bring in proper age verification for children so that they're not exposed to harms online.
But I just don't understand why you need
with the social media companies is over.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people would welcome that sentiment that the softly approach is over. But you haven't stopped the softly approach. You've just talked about stopping the softly approach. You set up a task force to examine the harms to children, and yet you've just said social media companies are doing harm to children. You know, there's acres of evidence that social media companies are doing a lot of, not intentionally, but the information or the access to it and all of that is doing harm to children. So why do you need a task force? That's the question. Why not take action?
We are taking action. So there's the Irish law. We're funding awareness campaigns for parents and for young people here in Ireland. We're funding in-school education. So we're taking action immediately. And as I say, any sort of softly partnership approach with the online platforms, from my perspective, that's over now. As far as I'm concerned, we're dealing with the tobacco companies in the 1960s, and this needs to be treated in the same way.
Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, thank you very much for your time this evening.